I believe the customer is sizing us up, especially when they're not buying.
Welcome to the Quotable Podcast. I'm Kevin Michalitzi. Today we're speaking with Steve Anderson. He's the president and founder of Performance Methods, Inc., and he's the author of Beyond the Sales Process, 12 Proven Strategies for a Customer-Driven World. And today we're really digging into what you need to be doing to plan to grow your existing accounts. Making the sale is great, but you really should be building that foundation for even greater sales in the future. Let's jump into it. Steve, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hey, glad to be here, Kevin, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and also to address your audience. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. So, Steve, I'm very excited to jump into the topic, but before we do, would you share a little bit about yourself for our listeners?
So, Kevin, since the audience would be people that are interested in the sales space, I have to tell you, I'm really an accidental sales guy. What does that mean? Well, my dad was one and my granddad was one and my two closest uncles, they were as well. Kevin, it was the last thing in the world I wanted to do. And there was a company, a well-known company, I won't mention their name, trying to hire technical people. And I was working my job out of college is a profession called actuarial sciences. Do you know anything about actuaries? Have you encountered any of those folks before?
The name, and that's about it.
The joke is that an actuary is an accountant without a personality. What does that really mean? It means that we study death in the life insurance business, and where else would a person with a couple of degrees in math go, right? So that's how I started, and I'm going to work every day, and it's just not a lot of fun, and I hear about this company, and it's a go-go computing company, and they're trying to hire technical people, only nobody's passing the test. And what kind of test was it? It is a math test. And so the rest would be history, only they switched me to sales right away, and here you and I are. So
excellent.
That's my story. That's how I got here. And and I founded this company called Performance Methods, Inc., or PMI, about 20 years ago. My career was in enterprise software, and I began to look at sales and deals and customers differently over time, not just what can we do, but why are these people making these decisions or not? What are we doing and how are we engaging? And that general curiosity kind of accompanied me throughout my career in the software business. And that was kind of the basis for starting PMI or Performance Methods, Inc. almost 20 years ago now.
And when we first did a call together, we talked about a lot of different topics, but I think the one that I really want to focus on is how you plan to grow. Because I think a lot of sales reps, you know, and I won't say it's because we're being short-sighted. I would argue it's more often than not, probably because there's so much pressure to find net new clients. But most salespeople aren't taking the time or don't even know how to approach growing their existing accounts. So I really want to tuck in. And
yeah, let's go, because that's if I have a favorite topic, I think you just touched it.
I love it. So where's the best place to start?
Well, how about we start where you just started, because you said something that I think is very impactful. Wonder why it is that there's so many thousands and thousands of salespeople and experts out there in the sales profession, and I guess there are. But when you then look at it through a slightly different lens, let's now look at doing business with very large, potentially repeat type customers. And the filtration is rather dramatic. And, you know, I say that as a practitioner in a community called the Strategic Account Management Association. I've been in it for 20 some years now. But we're all about, what is it that we can do to become more strategic to these most important customers? But you, Kevin, I think just nailed the problem. Many of us will call us practitioners, right? So those of us that are out there with titles, salesperson, account executive, account manager, whatever it is, we're trying to hit a number. And I can get all the qualitative things right with my customer that could possibly be gotten right, and I'm still going to get fired if I don't hit my number. So what I see happening, and I think you put your finger right on the pulse of it, quite candidly, I call it the tyranny of the urgent. The tyranny of the urgent sets in. And when that happens, it's not that the typical salesperson, man or woman, he or she knows full well we need to be doing the right things by the customer, from the customer perspective, with long-term and short-term balance. But once tyranny of the urgent sets in, it takes over. And I think what happens is many of us are managed, and I had a dose of this early in my career, by sales managers that are interested in one and only one thing, which is, are you going to hit your number? Are you going to have too many discounts? When are these deals going to happen? And when you pound that into people again and again, unfortunately, the great guest of honor in sales, the customer, moves into last place. And so I think all of that contributes to a dynamic in which, unfortunately, there are not a lot of people raising their hands that think they really do well day in and day out, becoming more strategic to their most important customers and driving revenues through their largest accounts.
Before we dig into how you can grow those accounts, I want to ask you, as a sales leader, I mean, obviously having all of your reps hit their numbers, you know, make their quota is incredibly important. Are there other metrics you have found that help to eliminate this challenge of urgency?
Oh, wow. Now that, so we could do a full session on that. So the short answer is yes, but it warrants a comment. So we've studied this, and this is a big part of the work we do. And we look at it in two different sets of dimensions. First of all, long and short-term measures. And we think that there are some natural pressure points and tension areas between short-term revenue requirements to be effective in sales and the longer-term care and feeding, nurturing of the customer. Then there's another set of a couple of dynamics that I would refer to as objective and subjective. The ultimate objective measurement is, Kevin, did you hit your number, yes or no? And did you do it by the date you said you would, yes or no? And were your discounts too high, yes or no, right? So, and I say that with tongue in cheek, but I mean, I managed four large sales organizations, and that's kind of what it's about. However, and I feel as a bit of a mathematician, I feel very strongly about this. I would suggest that in many cases, last year's revenues are not a leading indicator of this year and certainly next year's revenues. There are subjective measures that have to do with, do we have customer sponsors? Have we built trust-based relationships? Are we working horizontally across the organization to uncover future potential value targets? There are subjective measures that I believe are much better predictors of future revenue. And I'll stop with that. But between the long-term, short-term, and the subjective, objective, there's an awful lot we can look at besides just revenue to get a clearer picture, not just on where we are today, but perhaps more importantly, where we will be and hope to be tomorrow.
I've spent a good part of my career in the subscription model space where, you know, your long-term relationship to the client makes or breaks what you do. Yeah, it really does. But yeah, I can see how this applies to so many different areas. But I really want to dig in, especially for the reps listening, because I think this is such an important area and I don't see as much focus placed on it in a lot of the materials and trainings that I see going around. So if I'm a sales rep, where's the best place to start? What do I need to be doing?
Yeah. So let's look at it through a couple of different sets of lenses, right? Let's stay with the, so I'm an eyeglass guy, so I like to think in terms of clear vision. First of all, when we think about, let's just call it growing accounts, and we have published a lot on this. I know you're familiar with some of that, but just to try to keep it at a high level. So we believe in intentional growth. If you can get some accidental growth along the way, that's a whipped cream cherry on top, right? But deliberate planned growth with the customer at the center is, we think, what it's all about in terms of driving business and driving growth in large customers. So just think of four connected puzzle pieces, right? And the first one is labeled plan. I want a plan. I need a plan. I'm going to build a plan. And that's a start. But what we know is that most plans are never executed. So the second puzzle piece, let's call it upper left, upper right now, is execution. Am I really doing what I said I would do? Okay. The third piece is review. Once we do what we do, and if you and I were going out in one of your previous positions in sales, we're going out to see a customer. If they've already done business with us, seems to me it's a natural thing to say, how are you doing with all those licenses you've already got? We call that review. And then the fourth puzzle piece is adaptation, which really means, how do we need to change what we do to ensure that we connect with what's most important to the customer? And so if you think about starting there, and so, you know, you've got these four interlocking puzzle pieces. We plan, we have a deliberate plan, and we get our team behind us. That's a very important component. We'll see if we have time to talk about that. Execution, am I doing what I said I was going to do? Unfortunately, Kevin, my experience, most people never execute their plans. But let's say we do. Am I willing to step back? Because I can guarantee you, and I base this on over 1,000 customer interviews, the customer is going to evaluate whether we did what we said we were going to do or not. So are we going to step back, ideally with the customer, say, hey, how did we do? Let's review. Let's talk about what could have gone better and what we would change next time. That takes us right into the fourth quadrant of adaptation. And then what we have seen happen is when thoughtful salespeople by any title engage a customer that's been successful with them and talk about, where do we need to change how we work together to make it better for you? There's a natural restart. Well, let's talk about where we might plan next time. And then if you take those puzzle pieces and kind of superimpose in the middle, what I would refer to is customer value co-creation. A lot of syllables, right? But first of all, it's got to be about the customer. It's not about products and solutions, okay? I mean, solution selling was very popular some decades ago, but there are plenty of great solutions out there that do not bring value to me. So the question is, what is it that the customer requires in terms of value? And we use the term co-creation because there really cannot be any creation of customer value unless the customer is involved. And so it's kind of going into this discussion. That's the way we see it. Do we have a plan? Are we doing what we said we would do in terms of execution? Are we stepping back to look at how we're doing and how we've done? And are we willing to change? And by the way, Kevin, I don't know what your experience has been, but mine has been salespeople can be some of the most resistant to change. I mean, I think we have a bit of a bravado in the sales profession. You know, let's be innovative and try doing different things. But I know a lot of salespeople, and I've worked with a lot, that this is working for me. Why do I want to change this? Well, you got to change if you're going to do business with a customer again and again, because they are changing. So I would say that's kind of our starting point. That's how we kind of enter the discussion. And then it goes in lots of directions after that.
I think there's a certain amount of fear in changing, because if I've got an approach that works right now, I don't want to do anything to disrupt that. I mean, there may be a potential for even greater returns and in either even greater performance, but I would assume most reps are just afraid that if I do this, I'm not going to be able to make the numbers, but I know I can with my old system or my old approach.
Yeah, you know, and that, it's so true. I couldn't agree more, because I think we've all heard the expression, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. I think there's a new wild card in the mix. And in fact, just based on the kind of work that we do, which is, you know, this type of work, you have to interview in my company, we have to interview client customers. And we do that in every engagement. And the thing that is happening that is forcing salespeople to change, and I'm not going to get into AI and IoT and you know, digital transformation. I'm going to leave that for another conversation. Those are absolute factors. But the customer is changing. And the customer is the great wild card. And, you know, you and I were talking a bit earlier about things that are changing in terms of nature in different parts of the country. One thing that we see changing in terms of the way customers behave, they're under, I believe, more pressure than ever before. That's what they tell us. They have to make decisions more quickly than ever before. They're more informed in many cases than ever before. And I think in some cases, they're more confused than ever before. And so when you wrap all that together, the salesperson that isn't willing to change because things are working out pretty well for me, I must be okay, I hit my numbers this year, your customers are changing. So unless you're going to go after new customers each and every day, you've got to be, in my opinion, you've got to be willing to understand what's happening with the customer. Only here's the problem. Most salespeople selling to that customer don't know. So if you are the one, Kevin, or I'm the one, or we're the ones, right, that find out what really matters to the customer, and we call it three things: their pressures, objectives, and challenges, what's putting pressure on them that they have to respond to, what are they trying to do so they're not overcome and overwhelmed by that pressure, their objectives, and then finally, why do they need help, their challenges, obstacles, potholes, hurdles. If we know more about that than anyone else does, we're going to be very successful, because we're going to connect and align with the customer around what's most important to them.
So we're talking, you know, plan, execute, review, and adapt. On the plan side, I think it's back to what we were talking about before. It's a function of all the pressure on individual reps. I think most plan for that initial sale and not for the life of the customer. What do they need to be focusing on to really develop that long-term plan?
You know, it's really quite interesting to field your questions here, because for me, that's a softball question. I really appreciate it.
I was going to say, am I just teeing you up for the questions you anticipate?
No. It's really just a very favorite area for me. So we think that there's potentially three dimensions in planning. And we call it, and this is actually in the book, Beyond the Sales Process, am I planning to engage? Am I planning to win? Or am I planning to grow? And they're interconnected. And what Dave Stein and I did in writing the book was we interviewed a number of very successful salespeople and account managers. And we basically said, let's talk about how you do what you do. And we observed a set of interconnected behaviors. And I won't take us into that in this conversation, but those behaviors aggregate into three subsets. One subset has to do with engaging with the customer, Kevin, whether they're buying anything or not. And by the way, I believe the customer is sizing us up, especially when they're not buying. And when we are not there, when they need us most, and they recognize the fact that I'm not buying anything, maybe Steve doesn't have time for me today, that memory, the sting of that can last for a long time. Now, what Dave and I did, and Dave is my co-author, as you know, what we did is we said, well, okay, let's look at time. Let's look at this on a time continuum. I'm planning to engage. I've got to manage my time. Now the customer says they want to buy something. Well, the middle planning zone is planning to win. If I'm in it, I'm going to be in it to win it, as they say. So what do I do to plan to win that piece of business that was a lead or a, let's call it a prospect that resulted from planning to engage? And then finally, well, now that I've won that, what do I do to grow or plan to grow so I'm first in line, or at least near the first, the beginning of the line, the next time that customer buys. And I'll just offer you something that we observed, and I probably delivered this particular message to I don't know how many audiences, and I honestly I've never been challenged on it, because when people think about it, I think they realize, yeah, that's pretty much true. If you think about a customer, the company, and then a person, Kevin, that you were in relationship with, right? A man or a woman there that was your customer within the account. And you ask yourself, this person, they probably work 50 weeks, 40 hours, 2,000 hours. How much of their time are they really spending buying something from me? And you start by saying, well, how about 50% of their time? No way. 1,000 hours a year? Not going to happen. When you winnow this down, 25%, 500 hours. Nope, nope, nope. Having gone through this exercise with so many audiences, most people say, well, they might spend 20 to 40 hours, 1 to 2%, maybe on the outside, 5%. Well, hang on. Then they're spending a very small percentage of their time buying. That's when you're planning to win. They're spending much more of their time when you're either planning to engage or planning to grow. And so this is why we believe the actions that are taken after the sale have everything to do with positioning the salesperson before their next sale.
Right. Is it a different mindset? If I'm working with a customer, you know, I'm working to understand their business and really make sure that my products are right for solving the challenges they have. Is it different once I've sold it to them? Is it just a function of like customer success as the center of that growth plan? So, you know, are they successful with the product they purchased, or am I really trying to find, let's say, new or innovative ways to sell them additional products? I guess I'm trying to put this in context.
So you mentioned the term mindset, and I think it is a different mindset. And we have studied this, and we actually wrote about it and continue to write about it, because it can become, I would just say, too complicated. And then when the tyranny of the urgent, as we talked about earlier, sets in, it's like, oh, wow, I just better revert to my comfort zone and get something done. But I'll use the D word, because this is a word that I think is very important if you're going to work with large accounts. And that means discipline. And what I mean by that is, for most of us, based on the conversation we had a few minutes ago before we started the interview here, both of us today, there's a lot going on, and there's no shortage of items that want to take priority. And yet when I'm working with a large account and they aren't buying something today, will I have the discipline to engage effectively and plan to grow with them, whether they're buying or not? I think that is a significant reason why many people have very good intentions, right? But I think there's another component, and it's complexity. And what I mean by that is, there's no shortage of people, myself included, that have not necessarily had a great experience in doing what we might refer to as strategic account planning and management. It's kind of interesting, if we were to walk around the streets of any major city and we stop people and say, hey, you work for a big company, do you? Yes. Okay, great. Have you got a sales organization? Yeah, you do. How long you had it? 50 years, 100 years. Okay, fine. Do you have a strategic account organization? And many of them will say no. And of the few that say yes, it was, well, how long have you had it? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And I say that based on experience in the SAMA organization. And we've worked with organizations that have been recognized for strategic account, large account excellence. And many of those programs, those organizations, are not that old. Why is this the case? Because I think many people tried this in the 80s and the 90s. They recognized this takes a mindset shift, this takes discipline, patience, and we just don't have that right now. But then something happened in or around 2008. And what we saw in a variety of industries, certainly not just financial services, but with the financial meltdown of 2008, we observed a lot of companies taking a different perspective and adopting a different mindset, which was, you know what? I better start treating these customers as, if not my most important assets, okay, that's my employees, then my second most important assets, or else I'm not going to have these assets. And so what we've tried to do is simplify this. And I was just talking to somebody earlier this week about it's much more difficult to be simple than it is to be complex in the performance space. And so we think there's four words that if the contemporary salesperson has these four words in their mind all the time, we talked about a, you know, kind of a process flow, plan, execute, review, adapt. I mean, that'll get you in the game. But once you're in the game, what are you thinking about? We think there's four words. And if we can keep these words top of mind, these four words can really help us when we engage with these customers and we try to find our way in terms of being very proactive. And those words are value, the value we have created in the past, the value we are creating today, and the value we hope to create in the future, which is very important. The second word is alignment. And candidly, the elephant in the room for many organizations we work with is what I would call internal alignment. I kind of know what I'm supposed to do as the lead salesperson or account manager on my big account, but my team doesn't have my back. Moreover, we're organized by product and geography, and they don't share my priorities. I'm having trouble executing. Then there's alignment externally with the customer. Well, what we've observed, Kevin, is if we can't get aligned internally, we're not going to align effectively externally. So the second big word is alignment. The third one is relationships. And I would be absolutely delighted to debate any LinkedIn pundit publishing today, and there is one out there for sure. Relationships are dead. It's all about bots and AI, and salespeople will be extinct by the year 2025, okay? I've never talked to a customer that did not value a trust-based relationship with a provider that they cared about. And so we believe very much, especially in high-end B2B. I mean, if it's business to consumer, I think it still matters, but it's different. But high-end B2B commerce, we believe relationships are important and will continue to be. And then the fourth word is growth. Is there mutual growth for the salesperson's organization as well as the customer? Because this is where I can be hard on customers. It can't always be that when the shoe falls, the customer wins and the provider loses, because at some point that will break. So those are our four words. And what I say to people is, look, this can get complicated, but you're walking into the lobby of your most important customer or one of your top 10%, top 20% customers, which probably represent 75% or 80% of your revenue. What are you going to talk to them about? Well, my suggestion is if it's not one or more of these four things, value, alignment, relationships, and growth, then why are we talking about those things? So we do a lot of work in those areas, and a lot of what we do with our clients is really designed to help them in those areas. But we find that salespeople kind of like a simple model, put you and your team at the center of those four things, and there's a whole lot to talk about in each of those zones, and they interconnect as well.
Let me ask you then, for the reps listening, what's the most important thing they need to do now? Like, what's the most important first step for them?
In my opinion, it's understand what matters most to your customer over the next 12 to 24 months. And Kevin, it is amazing how simple it is to go to a customer. I mean, let's just say you're the customer. We just quick role play this. You're the customer. If I call you and I say, hey, Kevin, look, I really appreciate the business that we've done together, the value we've co-created together. But look, part of my responsibility for my company is to plan to grow. They expect me to have some sort of a plan for where we take this. And, you know, I can sequester myself in a closet and come up with something that has little or no meaning or relevance to you, which is absurd. Or maybe if I just ask a couple of questions, like when you look out over the next 12 to 24 months, what do you really need to get right? And once we get into that discussion, what's it going to take to get there? And Kevin, what does success look like for you? If I can get into that conversation with you, there's a very high probability, A, no one or not many others in sales are having that conversation, and B, we're going to be more aligned as a result, C, you're going to identify what we call future potential value targets. There's going to be something to talk about. And so I would say, let's not make it too complicated. If we want the customer to grow with us, then we should plan to grow together. And the only way to do that is to ask the customer where they want to go and what success looks like. And I'll also just add this for you. When I interview customers, I will frequently ask them towards the end of the interview when everybody's real comfortable, hey, by the way, what percentage of the salespeople that call on you try to understand what success looks like to you? And most of them say, well, I've never been asked that question. They want to know how I can use their products. And so I tried to answer your first question, and I'm just going to footnote that by saying, if that's the to-do, to try to to make it your business to understand what success looks like to the customer, the not to do, and this is hard, don't look at the customer through the lens of your product, because what you see is a very distorted, limited image. If you can look at your customer through the lens of what matters most to them, number one, you're in much cleaner, clearer airspace because most of your competitors aren't doing that. Number two, you have just elevated the dialogue with the customer because you're having a conversation with them. A, they want to have it because it's about their success, and there may not be anybody else having that exact conversation.
For our sales leaders listening, what's the most important thing they can be doing to help their reps better plan for their existing accounts and future growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. Most sales leaders that we know have their own issues with the tyranny of the urgent and discipline at a different level. It's like, you know what? I really want to plan with my guys and my gals. I really want to do it right. I want to sit down with the men and women on my team and give them the time they need to plan. But doggone it, I got to hit this number. And so that pressure, that's real. And I don't say that as a spectator. I was, you know, that guy for many years.
Applying that pressure, right?
Yeah, applying it. But you know what? It trickles downhill. It was applied to me, and it trickles all the way up. And we had some very aggressive investors in some of these companies, and I don't blame them. You know, it's like, well, you know, we're going to bring some top talent in here, and we want to see the results of that. The thing I would say to leaders is be available to coach. If I'm your guy, worry more about coaching me than managing me, okay? If I really need to be managed, maybe I don't need to be working for you anyway, okay? But if I need to be coached, Kevin, I go back to these four impact zones. If I need coaching, I'm probably needing it in one or more of the four areas. Am I co-creating value? Am I aligned internally? Can I get the resources I need? Am I connected with my customer? Alignment. Third, do I have a relational issue, either internally with my own colleagues and peers or with this customer? And then finally, am I thinking about growth? Am I thinking beyond today and maybe even tomorrow to next month, next quarter, next year? And what I find is that when sales leaders kind of put that hat on, well, okay, we're going to have a coaching conversation. What are we going to talk about? Let's talk about value co-creation with your customers. Let's talk about alignment. Do you really feel we've got your back? Let's talk about relationships. And we look for what we call sponsors and supporters. Sounds pretty simple, but we're finding that when we do win-loss analysis in our clients, a lot of times when there's a big win, there was a sponsor in the works. And you hear sponsors referred to as champions and just a whole host of terms. But we like the term sponsor because a sponsor is typically a customer that's willing to put themselves at least at a little bit of risk to help Kevin or help Steve. Why? Because of our past proven value with them. And those sponsors are very precious. And what I say to sales managers again and again is when you look into your most important customers, look for sponsors and ask your salespeople, who are the sponsors? Why are they sponsoring? And how are you going to get more? Because you can never have enough of those. So, I just think those four areas, if we can focus on value, alignment, relationships, and growth in our conversations, not just with our customers, but with our salespeople, there's an awful lot of good that we can do just with that.
Excellent. You need to plan, execute, review, and adapt. I really like that because I think, honestly, we do miss. You know, even if we plan, are we ensuring that we execute? Because, you know, trust is made or broken if we're making promises and we're not delivering. But then the review and adapt, I think, is an area that we just too often overlook, you know, because we hit the sale and we make sure the customer is at least set so that they have a chance to be successful, but we don't look at it in terms of the long-term growth of the relationship. So, Steve, I need to pivot. I want to ask you our lightning round question. If you could take all the knowledge and experience you have now, go back to the beginning of your career and give yourself one piece of advice, what would you tell yourself?
Yeah, I would tell myself, even though I'm not a golfer, okay, I would tell myself to balance the long game and the short game evenly.
Okay.
I think that it is so tempting, particularly in today's environment, right, to go straight to the short game. You know, what's in my pipeline that I can close this week, this month, this quarter? And we kind of sell ourselves out when we take that perspective. When if we can have a balanced view of the short game, yeah, the quarter, the month, that's fine, maybe even the year, but the long game. And that long game is played in many scenarios with these larger accounts that are not buying all the time, but they will do repeat business over time. And so that's probably, I was never really coached to look at it that way. And I kind of figured that out as a sales executive that, you know, if I really get it right with these large customers, we'll live to fight another day and another year and another decade. And that's really true. And that was advice that I think was a little hard to come by for some of us. So that's what I would say. Balance, look at the long term, look at the short term, balance long game, short game. And I think good things can happen.
Balance is usually a good thing. Steve, thank you so much for joining me today.
Kevin, a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. For more conversations like this, visit quotable.com.